And I'm back. Hey, welcome to Peek Behind the Curtain. My name is Vince Corona, ranting Chicago comedian, performing since 2001. So I'm going to get right back into it here. This is part four of Life is a Gamble. So I can tell you all about what I've been doing for the past batch of time that I haven't been doing this podcast, but it would all just be a lie, and I've just been lazy. So it's time to get to it. If you haven't heard the previous three episodes, I am a recovering gambler. This March of 2022 was 3 years sober for me, and or whatever you would call it, 3 years of not gambling. I don't know if that's sober, what we call it in the gambling world. But I'm telling the final meltdown here is what today's about. So go listen to the previous three episodes of this particular topic, and I'm going to walk you through it here on the other side of this intro. So make sure you subscribe to my social media at Vince Corona and everything. More importantly, go to vincecorona.com and sign up for my mailing list so I can let you know when I'm touring around and when the rest of the podcasts are coming out or any other content I'm putting out. So let's get to it. My goals in my life are to be a good father, to be... Fuck you.
Get loud, right past his home, Vince Corona!
So the reason I'm single...
Yeah, we know that.
Yeah, because your wife stopped fucking me for free.
You guys ready to see your headline tonight?
Guys, be like the exhibits at a pro-choice rally or something.
Welcome to the stage, the very funny Vince
Corona. All right, well, we're gonna separate this into two segments. So the first major meltdown that happened in 2013, and then the final meltdown that happened in 2019. So in October of 2013, I was betting a lot that football season. And I was up quite a bit of money winning football games, winning thousands of dollars betting on football games in the month of September, just going on the run of a lifetime. And it all came kind of crashing down. There was one week in early October where I lost probably $5,000 in a day. I just kept betting and betting and betting and calling my bookie and extending my line of credit and betting and betting and betting and all in, all things considered, everything said and done. I wound up about $7,000 in debt on my credit card, and I remember I was with my mom and dad at a funeral for my uncle, and that was the day I kind of like hit my breaking point with it, and I told my mom and dad that I lost $7,000 and that I was gonna have to go home and tell my wife about it. Because I had enough and I didn't want to be gambling anymore. And that was in 2013. And so as a gambler, it's important to realize you go through several of these times where you don't want to gamble anymore. And it's never when you're winning. It's never like, hey, I won $7,000. I don't want to gamble anymore. I want to keep this money. Of course, it's when you hit rock bottom. Dennis Miller used to have a funny joke where he said, people only find God in troubling times. Nobody finds God on prom night. It's only when you fuck your life up so bad that you do. And I think just in a parallel, a metaphor here, same thing here is you're not looking to stop gambling, on the good nights. You're only doing it when something bad happens. You're looking to go stop gambling. So that's my experience anyway. So on October 28th, 2013, I went home from this funeral and I sat my wife down. And I told her, I've got something to tell you. It's not good. So just kind of brace yourself for some bad news here. I started tearing up and crying, which is that's difficult for me because I'm not a big crier in a lot of situations, and I'll stifle the emotion a lot. So for me to get to that point, it's shame, it's embarrassment. I don't think any of it was crocodile tears, but. When you gamble and you lie and you're being manipulative like that, maybe some of it was. I'd like to believe it wasn't because I know I did feel bad. But being that I did gamble again after this, maybe some of it was drummed up unintentionally on my end or intentionally at the time. I don't know how I felt. But anyway, I broke down and I was crying and I told her, here's what I did. I screwed up. I have a gambling problem. And my wife's not dumb. She knew that I liked to gamble. Everybody in my family, my wife included, kind of knew that I had a gambling problem. We all just kind of tried to sweep it under the rug as much as we could. And I hadn't had any instances in a long time in the year or so that we were married, and the past couple of years that we were together before that, where it was anything like alarming, at least as to where she would know. Because before we were married, it was my own money, so I didn't have to share it. I didn't have to tell her. And transparently, it was easier to stop gambling if I lost $1,000 before I was married. This is going to sound dumb, but before I was married, if I lost $1,000 or $1,500, I might stop myself from gambling right there and just be pissed off that I did that. The problem came in is when I was married and we joined our bank accounts, I could no longer stop at $1,000 or $1,500 in the hole because I had to dig my way out of it. Otherwise, I would have to tell her. So oddly enough, I didn't get into this much trouble when it was just me. I mean, I had some bad times where I would lose money back, but I didn't dig this far into a hole myself until I had to start compounding the lies to try and get myself out of other trouble. So I'm not blaming marriage and gaslighting that, saying that's the reason this happened. It's just that's the reality of it is I didn't want to tell my wife, hey, I'm down $1,000. So I gambled $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 till I got to the tune of $7,000 on my credit cards. So I told her about it. She was pissed. She was understanding. Then she was angry again. And then she was understanding. And then she was angry again. But more than anything, she was supportive. And she was the first one to say, we're going to pay that off and we're done with that shit. We're not gambling anymore. And I was all on board. I was like, yeah, I'm not gambling anymore either. And I'll get to the rest of that in a minute here. But something I didn't tell her at the time that she found out later. But it was a Monday night and she went to bed. And when she went to bed, I was watching the Monday night football game, the Seahawks played the Rams, okay, Monday, October 28th, 2013. And the line on the game was Seattle minus 11 and over under 42.5. And what I didn't tell my wife was I had made a $1,300 bet on a 7-point teaser of the Seahawks and the under. So a teaser is where you're given more points. So if the line is minus 11, and I take the Seahawks, I get 7 points. So the Seahawks go from minus 11 to minus 4, meaning the Seahawks don't have to win by 11. They only have to win by 4 now because I bought it down 7 points. And if the over-under was 42.5, I can get 7 points whatever way I want. I can either say I want the under of 49.5 or I want the over of 35.5. I can swing the spread and the over-under by 7 points either way that I want it to benefit me. And when you do a teaser, though, you have to lay money, meaning you have to put up more money than you'll win. So if I bet $1,300 on that, I might only win, you know, $1,000 or however the betting worked. So that's how that works. So I had that on the game. And I'd already lost the $7,000, but in my gambling brain, I'm like, I'm not going to tell her about the bet that I had already put in. I'm just going to hope to God that it wins and not have to tell her that I lost more money, which is just dumb because I'm sitting there coming clean. Why not just be clean about the whole thing? And that's how I, you know, knew maybe I wasn't ready to quit gambling yet, but at least, you know, I had to see what happened. She went to bed. So, and the reason I did this bet is Sam Bradford, who was the quarterback for the Rams, had just been ruled out of the game. Okay, and so I was like, okay, this seems like a good bet now. You know, with the Seahawks, they jumped to minus 11 because it was a backup quarterback going to be in, so I bought it down to 4. I'm like, great, the Seahawks just have to win by 4 against a backup quarterback. Now, this is 2013. This is the Seahawks who are about to go win a Super Bowl, if I remember correctly. If I remember correctly, they won the Super Bowl in February of 2014. So this is that awesome team. But anyway, so I'm watching this stupid game that I don't care about, that I would never watch in my life except that I've got money on it. Something that would follow me forever with football is I always thought that I loved football. I was a diehard fan. And once I stopped gambling on football, I realized I actually don't love watching it as much as I thought I did. I just love to have action on the games. And that's okay. I've talked to a few other gamblers who are afraid to stop gambling because they're afraid they won't like watching sports anymore. And as dumb as that fear sounds, like, well, who cares? Just don't watch sports then. It's actually a legitimate fear. So if that is you, I empathize with you. I went through the same thing. Like, what am I going to do if I don't like football anymore without gambling? Well, I still love watching the Bears, but I got my life back to where I don't have to go and give up every Sunday and Monday or Thursday now or Saturday sometime, whenever they do. I don't have to give up my whole life to go watch football anymore. If it's on, it's on, and I can care less with the outcome on any game but the Bears. And even in that, I don't have much investment anymore outside of just fandom. Just being a fan, not fandom's not a gambling site. That's just me saying a word that I don't even know if it's a word. So anyway, I'm watching this stupid game on this Monday night, and these are moments I don't miss in my life. But I went back and I had to kind of look up some of these stats because it's been so long. So I kind of pieced together that night. So with 8:33 left in the game, the Seahawks are winning 14-9. 14-9. Okay. And the Rams just missed a field goal with 8:33 left in the game, which helps keep my teaser intact because the Seahawks are up by 5 and I need them to win by 4. This game is way too fucking close for where it's at right now, and it shouldn't be this close, okay? But the Rams get the ball back with 5:42 left in the game. And now looking at the score, I must have had the Seahawks and the under of 49.5. So the Rams get the ball back with 5:42 left in the game, and they drive 95 yards, eating up the entire clock along the way. Okay, and the reason this is bad, if you're a gambler or if you're into this at all, you already know why this is bad for me. If you're not a gambler, let me explain it to you here. If the Rams score, okay, it's going to be 16-14. Okay, and they're going to be up. And even if they go for two, it'd be 17-14. If they miss it, 15-14, it fucks up my Seahawks winning by 4. And even if they score and the Seahawks get the ball back and kick a field goal, it's only going to be 17-15, 16-17. It's not going to be enough. So I start running through all these what-if scenarios. So with the two-minute warning left in the game, the Rams are on the Seahawks 21-yard line, 21 yards away from scoring. So as a degenerate gambler, here's the stupid shit we start doing. I 100% right now want the Rams to score right away as soon as possible to go up 15-14, because then I'm hoping they will go for a two-point conversion, because they would go for it to try and go up by 3, and I'm hoping that they make it. So that way the score is 17-14. I'm hoping for this to happen because I don't want the Rams to run down the clock and then score with no time left on the clock. So I need the Rams to score a touchdown right away because I need them to get a two-point conversion and go up 17-14. Those of you that gamble are shaking your head, yes, that's exactly what you want to happen right now. It's like playing Madden, a game of Madden on Xbox, whatever the new video game system is. Sometimes you just want the score to happen quick so you can get the ball back and have a chance. So I need this to happen fast so that the Seahawks have time to come back down, tie up the game with a field goal, and force overtime, go into overtime at 17-17. Because in overtime, then, I'm hoping that the Seahawks get the ball first and they get a touchdown, allowing them to win by 6. This is how fucking stupid my Monday night has become. It's almost 11 o'clock at night now. I'm watching this dumb game that I don't care about, praying for the team that I don't want to win to score and get a two-point conversion so the Seahawks can get the ball back, come back down, score a field goal really quick, go into overtime, hope they get the ball first, and hope they score a fucking touchdown instead of a field goal. That's the scenario that I'm best hoping for right now, because I don't think there's any way that the Seahawks are going to stop the Rams from scoring. Okay, the last thing I want is the Rams to eat the entire clock, score a touchdown. I need all the hypotheticals to happen. Here's what ended up happening. Remember, I got $1,300 on this game. The first play after the two-minute warning is a 5-yard run to Seattle's 16-yard line. With a minute 23 left in the game, the Rams run the ball to the Seattle 6-yard line and get a first down and goal with only 46 seconds left. So I'm officially going to be fucked here because they're running the clock completely out. The first down play takes 8 seconds off the clock, but it results in an incomplete pass. At this point, I realize that I need Seattle to just hold them from scoring. I need the Seahawks to stop the Rams from scoring, because with only 38 seconds left in the game, all of my hypotheticals are now officially out the window. The Seahawks will not get the ball with enough time back to score a field goal and go into overtime and score a touchdown. So I need to just depend on defense, which I don't know if you've watched the NFL in the past 10 years, but defense fucking blows. It's an offensive scoring game. But this is that amazing Seattle defense that won that year, so hopefully they could do it. Second down and goal from the 6-yard line. the Rams run for 4 yards to Seattle's 2-yard line. Third down and goal. The Rams throw an incomplete pass. Thank God. But then I see what every gambler hates to see. A flag. Defensive offside. 1-yard penalty. Replay. Third down. So now I need them to stop him an extra down. Third down and goal from Seattle's 1 now. The Rams get stopped on a run for no gain. 4 seconds left in the game. Fourth down and goal. $1,300 riding on one play from the 1-yard line on a night where I told my wife that I was $7,000 in gambling debt and it's about to be $8,300. Fourth down and goal, incomplete pass on the left side of the field. The game is over. I don't even remember what money I won from that. I couldn't even tell you if it was $900, $1,000, whatever the fuck it was. All I know is I wasn't $1,300 more in debt. And I went to sleep that night and slept the sleep of 1,000 angels. I had the monkey off my back. I told my wife about my $7,000 in gambling debt. I admitted to being a gambling addict for the first time. I just won this crazy last stupid bet that I made. And I stopped gambling for 18 months. All right, so I stopped gambling for 18 months. I started gambling again maybe around May or June of 2015. And, you know, my wife and I ended up going back to Vegas, I think, in 2016 or 2017. And, you know, we both kind of felt that with enough time off of gambling that maybe I can keep it under control. I'm not going to do something stupid like that again. And I don't know if we really believe that, but my wife knew how much I really did like gambling and how much I loved going to Vegas. And she's always been a champion of mine and a super supporter of mine. And so I think she was really, you know, she still let me do fantasy football and a few other things. And we didn't realize till later that these would be triggers for me. But slowly but surely, we got back in the gambling space. And that was 2013. And so we went 2014, 15, 16, 17, 18, no problems at all. I didn't screw up. If her and I went to the boat together, you know, maybe we, you know, gave some money back. There were still some signs there that I still had this gambling compulsion, but I always went with her. I went to Vegas with her. I you know, I went through her for everything. I didn't have a credit card or anything unless it was tied to her. And so as long as she was there, I was able to keep my gambling and my emotions and my control in check. Okay. But here's what happened. I ended up getting my own credit card in 2019 because I had to expense a bunch of stuff that was coming in. So I got my own credit card, and I put my wife's name on the credit card as well. That way she would have access to it. So I'm not going to hide anything because I don't want to get in this trouble again. And I did that probably in like May or June of 2018. So in 2019, my wife went to Cabo with her friends for a week, celebrating a birthday. And while she was there, I've got my son, I've got a newborn, you know, daughter at home. A 13 or 14 month old daughter at home. It's January of 2019. I get bored. I look up online blackjack, and I start to find different sites. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, what is this here? Because I still get the offers in the email and stuff, and I would just usually ignore them. But I'm like, oh, okay, let me check this out. And I end up figuring out that I can use my credit card to get on there, and they put the charges as something different on the credit card. So it doesn't just say online blackjack. It's some, you know, whatever make-believe, you know, name of something else that covers it up. I suppose it's probably like if you order a dildo through the mail, they don't just send it in a plastic viewing open box for the neighbors to see. You know, they probably throw it in some, you know, box with a, you know, like, you know, a fucking Nespresso stamp on it or something so people think you just ordered something normal. But anyway, so I go online and I end up playing blackjack, and I go down a couple $100, maybe, you know, $500-$600, and then I pump in some more money. And before you know it, over the course of a couple nights, I'm up $8,000. Okay. And the reason this is awesome is I'm performing in Vegas in March of 2019. I'm performing at the MGM, and all my friends are coming out. So I'm sitting here going, oh, this is good. I've got $8,000 in gambling money. I'm going to like cash this out, and I'm going to go to Vegas when I'm there for a week. I'm going to go on like a crazy bender with $8,000 of free money, and I'm going to take the fucking house. Well, over the course of that week, I ended up losing all $8,000 back. You know that story. You know how that's going to end for me. You know I'm not going to keep that money. And so I lose all that back. And then over the course of maybe the next month, month and a half, I'm alternating between playing online, going to the boat, going online, going to the boat, and I end up losing $8,000. I lose $8,000 on my credit card. And I'm like, shit, I don't know what to do. Okay. And so I end up going to my IRA account and I take out $10,000 from my IRA account and get a check cut to me to go pay off my credit cards. So my wife doesn't know. She has access to this credit card, but she never looks at it because she trusted me. And which obviously wasn't smart because I'm prone to doing shit like that. But she trusted me, you know, credit to her. And so I took out $10,000 from my IRA because I needed to take the taxes out of it too. So I didn't have to pay the taxes at the end of the year on it. And it's like February now of 2019 and I pay off my credit cards. And I've got Vegas coming up. Well, at this point, when I pay off that credit card with that IRA money, I'm done gambling. Like I don't want to gamble anymore. I'm over it. I've decided I am done gambling. But I have one more run I have to make because it's February, and I know I've got till the end of the year and a few months of the next year before we go to the accountant and have to talk about our spending at tax time. Okay, so I know I've got 10 months plus maybe January and February of the next year. So let's call it. I know I've got 12 months to go figure out how to get this $10,000 from my IRA back so I could put the $10,000 back into my IRA and my wife will never know. All right. And I know that's a dumb plan. And the worst part was it was so far out because the only way for me to go get $10,000 is to gamble. And I don't want to gamble anymore. And so I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I don't want to just tell her and come clean and tell her. I'm too afraid to do that. So I just sit on this for like a month and a half before Vegas. I know I'm going to make a run for it in Vegas and try and do it there because I'm going to be there for a few days by myself. But, for probably the next 6 weeks, I probably only slept maybe half of every night for the next 6 weeks. I had so much guilt and shame. And my wife's just sitting there sleeping while I'm staring at a ceiling most nights, you know, being exhausted. And Vegas comes up in March of 2019. And I'm performing out there at the MGM. I performed in Vegas before, but I never performed on the Strip. So it's my first time performing on the Strip. And I'm at the MGM, which is one of the best clubs in Vegas, if not the best club, Brad Garrett's Comedy Club. And my wife comes out. My parents come out. My sister's out there at one point. A big group of my friends comes out. Everybody's just coming to see me. People from high school who just happened to be out there during March Madness, which was the week I happened to be there. People that I've known from previous times in my life just happened to be there that week. I'm running into all these people, and it should be like one of the best weeks of my life. Well, I know in the back of my head, I got to wait for all these people to leave because in the in the off hours when they all go to bed, I got to stay up and I've got to try and get this money back. Or when they all leave late in the week, I've got to try and get the money back. So while it should have been like the one of the best times of my life, I know that I don't want to gamble anymore. And I know I'm about to because it's my last hope to try and get some of this money back. But I don't even want to do it. I didn't even want to. I was already so over it and done with it. And so I had one last chance. So when my wife went back home, one night I took out $1,000 cash advance on my credit card. I tried to, but because I was in Vegas, my credit card suspected maybe it was fraud. And so they pinged our account, which I had set up my wife on this account as well. So so she got a notice saying, hey, somebody tried to take out $1,000 in Vegas. Well, I went on the email that I got and I fixed it all up and patched it all up and it went through and I ended up getting the $1,000. Well, from that $1,000, I won $500 that night. I think I stayed up till like, four in the morning or five in the morning, and I won $500. So between the $1,000 I took out and that, I got $1,500. I'm going, okay, I got a few days out here. Let me see what I can do with that $1,500. I go to bed. I'm exhausted. It's five in the morning. And about 20 minutes after I go to bed, I get a text message from my wife going, did you try and take out $1,000? Don't lie to me. And so I call her and I'm like, yes, I did. And she's like, what's going on? Don't be an idiot. Why are you doing that? And I'm like, but I realized very early in the conversation that she thinks that it denied me because that's the message she got. She doesn't know I cleared it up and I actually ended up getting the 1,000. So she thinks that I tried to take it out. I got denied. I was being stupid. And she's like, don't be an idiot. So she's not even as mad as she should be. And so she goes back to bed or whatever she goes on with her day. And I'm like, shit. And I'm just sitting there going, if she goes and looks through the credit card history or anything, even though I paid off the, the 8 grand on my credit card, I don't need her going through my history seeing that that happened. And now that she's been triggered about this credit card, I'm afraid she's going to start doing some research. And so I'm like, fuck, I need to go gamble this 1500 right now because I need to win 10 grand this morning. Because if she finds something out, I need to be able to tell her I've got it all covered. Don't worry. And you know how this story goes. I went back downstairs and I lost that $1,500 within an hour. I was so tired. I was so exhausted. I was betting like a moron, trying to win so fast out of desperation. And that's just no way to try and do this. And so it ended up being such a bummer of a trip outside of the performances for Comedy Tour Fun, but it was such a bummer of a trip. I felt lonelier than I probably ever felt in my life. I was crying out there by myself, just feeling like a total pile of shit. And I decided on my last day of that trip that I was done gambling and I was going to get help. My sister was out there on the last day of the trip, and she had a work conference coming up, so she ended up being there on my last day. And so we met up and hung out, and she wanted to gamble a little bit, so I watched her for a little bit, and I was like, I'm done gambling. And so long story short, I come home trying to get past this. 2 weeks after Las Vegas, my wife finds out about the $1,000 on the credit card. She doesn't do any research any further, but she finds out about that $1,000. And she's pissed at me. I told her I did it. And I still don't come clean and tell her that I lost that other 10 grand from my IRA. I just own up to the $1,000 on the credit card. We cut up my credit card in front of her. The credit card's paid off at that point. Everything's done. And I started going to counseling for it right there. And I think March 25th is the exact date of when I stopped gambling. I was sober from gambling, March 25th, and she knew about that credit card. But for the next 4 or 5 months at my counselor, as we're going through trying to find out why I like the highs and the lows of gambling and why I like the adrenaline, the anxiety, and the wins and the losses and the extremes that come out of it, I don't tell my counselor about this 10 grand from my IRA. Okay, I don't tell him because I finally started sleeping again. I didn't want to rehash all that and bring that back up. And I was afraid that he was probably going to tell me to go tell her. And I didn't want to fucking hear that. I still had till next February to try and figure it out. Well, in August of 2019, I'm out for the day doing a project. And I get a text from her and she goes, where did 10 grand go from your IRA? And I don't know how she found out because I had changed the IRA account to only give me digital notices and not send anything through the mail anymore. And apparently they still sent something through the mail months and months later. And she goes, is there anything I need to be worried about? And I wrote her back and I said, yes, I gambled it. And I just came clean right there. There was no point to trying it. I had about a split second to think, can I get out of it? And I'm like, nope, come clean with it. And we were supposed to go to my cousin's wedding in Kentucky that very night. She sent me a message saying, you know, we're not going to go. You can go by yourself. And I got booted out of my house for the weekend. And I didn't know it was just the weekend at the time, but I got booted. She didn't want to see me. And, you know, she had the kids. And, my parents went to the wedding that weekend down in Kentucky. So I ended up staying at their house for the weekend. And it was just, you know, I went right. It was so deflating because it was August and I'd already stopped gambling in March. I hadn't done anything. I wasn't playing fantasy football that year or nothing. And I was in a really good spot from my counselor. I was in a really good mental space and bam, this knockout punch came in. And so that was a Friday night. And so I called a couple friends and was like, you know, I got to do some damage control. I don't know what to do. I'm only going to do what I can to help me and help the situation. But however she feels about it, she has the right to feel, and I can't control this. So I ended up looking it up, and I went to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting. And I went to this Gamblers Anonymous meeting on Saturday morning that year. And it's the only one I ever went to. I only went to one of them. But I sat down, and I was a new member of it. So they backed it up, and we started out with step one of the 12 steps where I shared my story and listened to everybody else share their stories. And, you know, I realized that, you know, I hit my rock bottom, but so many people had so many worse rock bottom stories, and it kind of scared me straight, scared the spine out of me. And, you know, the crazy thing is my rock bottom of this 10 grand probably wasn't even my biggest rock bottom of my gambling life, but it was my personal bottom. It's where the emotions caught up to the money, caught up to the physical, caught up to everything. And I just, it's where I bottomed out in 2019. And I went to one meeting and I came home and I gave my wife the pamphlet and I left it on her desk when I came home to pick up clothes for the weekend. And she read the pamphlet, and God bless my wife. She read in there, like, you know, the part of, that spouses should read as well about, you know, this isn't just somebody being an idiot. Yes, we are being an idiot, but it's also, it's a very real addiction, much the same as alcoholism, you know, or drug use, or any of the other plethora of addictions that are out there in life. And my wife kept an open mind enough about it to, she was still very upset when she had the right to be, and but she had an open mind enough to accept that this is a real problem beyond just me being completely and utterly selfish, a selfish piece of shit as a person, that there was an addiction here behind it. And she was proud that I was already 5 or 6 months clean at that point, and I was already getting help. And so we worked through that. We worked that out. And if anybody wants any more details about that, you can send me a message at vince@vincecarone.com and ask any you know, deeper questions about that. And I'll be happy to share more about the story, but I want to share everybody how this ended and where my bottom came. And so it's been 3 years of sobriety since. I'm very open about it. I've got several people that, I don't know if I'm really a sponsor for them. I don't really use that language. I don't know if they do, but, I have several people that reach out to me and ask, you know, for my help on it. And I see people in different spots of it. You know, people who I could tell really want to quit, and people who I know think they should, but they're not ready yet. But yeah, I'm just listening to people and I'm supporting. So if you're out there and you're having an issue and you want to talk, there's no judgment on my end. I've done every dumb thing that you can do in this, and I've felt all the feelings that you could probably feel in this. And so you're not going to tell me or shock me with anything. I'm going to listen. I'm just going to give you my story. I don't really know how to be a sponsor. I just kind of listen to you and share my experiences with you so you don't feel alone. And, you know, when you're ready to stop, you're going to make those moves like I finally did after years and years and years and years of saying, I should stop. I have a problem. I should stop. I have a problem. I finally stopped. It can be done. So I did have to quit everything, though. So you'd have to find my triggers. Like, I had to stop fantasy football because Once my team in fantasy football is mathematically out from the playoffs for the year, then I would start betting on the football games because I was already too involved in the football season. So fantasy football was a trigger for me. So I can't even do a dollar scratch off. I can't, when I'm playing golf with my friends, I can't even do a dollar, you know, best hole. I can't do anything like that. Last year I went golfing with my friends a couple months back, actually in November, and we were down in Florida for a guy's trip golfing, and they wanted to, like, kind of have a wager on the, you know, my team versus their team and on the game. And I was like, well, listen, I don't bet anymore. I don't gamble. So if we're going to put up a stake at the game, it's got to be something that I would do anyway. So it's like, you know, loser buys the first round of drinks tonight at the bar. And it couldn't be loser buys drinks at the bar because there couldn't actually be a loser. Loser buys the first round, meaning the other people would have to buy the next round anyway. So it's something I would have done no matter what. I'd have bought a round of drinks at the bar no matter what. This was just a gimmicky thing. But I did find out about 9 holes into the game that my anger started rising again, and I started being ultra competitive in it again. And we had to shut it down and say, we can't be doing this. I can't, because to me, it's too close to gambling. I'm starting to feel those same feelings that I would feel and start to turn into a different person. So you have to learn where your triggers are, and you have to hold yourself accountable. So I share it openly with anybody who wants to know. I share with them, you know, this is what I've done. This is what my experience has been. And I feel insanely better. I don't have any nights of staring at the ceiling anymore because I gambled away money. I'm not being a jerk to people because my mood changes of gambling. I'm not addicted to the TV and iPad and phone for football games anymore. I'm not, you know, ultra competitive about the fantasy football. I live a carefree life of gambling. And for me, it works. It's held up. It's been 3 years. And, you know, I just know that if I ever start to feel that trigger, I need to get some help and tell people about it right away because I don't want to get that dark spot again in my life. So that's where we're at. So you've got the complete story now, all four parts to it. That's where I bottomed out. I'll continue this podcast and give everybody else some other fun stories now that I've finished this one here. But this is a tough episode for me to share because I had to share the vulnerable pieces, but that's what holds me accountable. So subscribe to my YouTube, like my Facebook, follow me on Instagram and Twitter. All those are at Vince Carone. And check out my website and sign up for my mailing list at vincecarone.com.